I'd like to return to the classics. Perhaps the most famous classic in all the world of music. And yet, for some strange reason, I've been told that I'm the only pianist to ever play this number in Carnegie Hall.
Farmer's Alley Theater, in collaboration with the Gilmore Keyboard Festival, will present a very special set of shows called Liberace. And here in the Takeda studio at the Yamaha Piano is David Maioko. It's very nice to meet you.
Hi, it's wonderful to meet you too. Thank you for having me.
And along for the ride today is the deputy director of Farmers Alley Theater, Rob Weiner. Nice to have you back.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Carrie. I'm David's like press agent, and I'm his coat boy if he needs, you know, I mean, his capes or anything like that for Liberace. So we're excited to be here.
He's the entire entourage.
You've arrived in town a little bit early to prepare to open the show on April 27th, and that's why we have the good fortune to have you here in the studio already, ready to play a little something. But first, I'd like to learn a little bit more about you as a performer, because you are not Liberace himself. Let's set him aside for a little bit. David, tell me about the music theater bug and how it bit you.
Well, you know, I did start playing by ear long before I took lessons and long before I remember. So I always liked, you know, the sort of pop tune thing. And my grandparents had, you know, all the theater albums, like, you know, he had Oklahoma and Sound of Music. And I used to love listening to those records and just playing along with them. And of course, I didn't have a piano till I was 9. My parents didn't have the money for one. We would go to my grandmother's house on her battered old upright, and I'd just start plunking out songs by ear. So my parents knew that I had a gift for music and saved up to get a piano. And I started taking classical lessons. And one of the things I think that a lot of people who play by ear, if they don't get lessons till later on, it's actually pretty difficult because they can already play. You know, they don't want to go back and learn theory and technique, which, you know, is a detriment when it comes time. If you do go to conservatory, then it's kind of, you know, you have to work that much harder to get your technique back. But I did it. I took my lessons and met some friends who were in musical theater. And I really wanted to play the piano in the orchestra pit. That's all I wanted to do. But I was so terrified to go to this audition for a youth group. Terrified. Faked being sick, everything. I just didn't have the confidence for stage or anything like that. And thankfully, my mother basically, you know, put me in the car and said, "You're going to audition." And I went in as a 15-year-old and sat down. It was the musical Snoopy, the sequel to Good Man Charlie Brown. And it was a score written for four hands. And the director, you know, looked at me. They were going to cancel the show. They didn't have anybody to music direct. And he looked at me and said, "Oh, good God, he's a child." And I sat down. I had listened to it before. And I sat down and I started playing it. And they, of course, hired me on the spot and said, "Rehearsal starts tomorrow." I think I made like, you know, $20 a week, and I was thrilled, my first paid gig. I walked in the next day, and I sat at the piano. I said, "Okay, where's the music director?" And the director said, "You're it, kid." So I was thrown into it, and baptism by fire. And I did that show. This cast was amazed that I could do this, and it was like the applause bug. It hit me. And that was the beginning of what has never stopped, pretty much.
Wow. That is a great theater story.
Long though it may be, it is the truth.
So being in the pit was your first experience as a paid performer, as a professional. Mm-hmm. Music directing, I've learned over the years, is not just about yourself. Most concert pianists focusing on the sound they produce and, you know, working through their program and building an evening of music. But that's only one part of what a music director does.
Oh, it's absolutely. And, you know, it's a it's very difficult for a serious concert pianist to actually do that. I mean, what they do is, like you said, in their own world, they are their entity. They're not worried about, you know, oh, the sopranos are a little off, or somebody needs help, or, you know, the tempo isn't gelling and you got to bring together a cast of 5 or 50, you know. And it is definitely a skill. It's an art to be a music director. I think for a pianist, you really have to be a good accompanist first. You really have to care about your singer. You have to be willing to sort of take that back seat, even though you're such an important driving force, and a good singer always really appreciates their good accompanist. And I think that carries over into music directing a show. You know, you're working with a director and a choreographer. You don't get final say in everything. You have to, you know, work together. And, you know, there's a lot of times that egos and just professional styles don't mesh so well. So you gotta really be willing to go with it. But the work is so satisfying when it comes off, you know, when that... I'm not a huge process person. I really like product. So it's like once we get to opening and everything's going and we can just roll and the orchestra's together and everyone's having fun, it's just been pure heaven for me doing that kind of work.
So you began, you started with a very collaborative sense of what performing and what, you know, being an artist is all about in the theater. And then you did spend some time at Boston Conservatory to kind of focus on those chops and get the training that you probably needed to go to the next level.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, to be able to, and especially to be able to play, you know, this Liberace style music, you know, you need to have some chops. And I thought, you know, you're young and you think, oh, I can do all of it. So I was like, you know, I'm going to do this. I auditioned at many schools and I didn't get into many for my undergrad, mostly because I had only mildly worked on my technique through high school and stuff. So, you know, hence you kind of get what you earn. But I did go and had a wonderful teacher at Boston Conservatory. And then after my bachelor's, I auditioned for New England Conservatory, Manhattan School of Music, Juilliard, Eastman, and in Rochester. And I got into everything but the Juilliard piano performance. I got in as a conducting major. And I thought, okay, that's kind of what I want to do. And basically, long story short, I just kept getting work. I was getting work music directing, and all my friends who had gone to conservatory and stuff, they were getting better chops than I was, but they weren't working, you know? So I just, in ways I wish I had finished my master's, and in other ways I've worked nonstop without it. So that's kind of, you know, but it's true. You really, to be a concert pianist, I mean, some of these musicians at the Gilmore, oh my goodness, I was reading the bios and I know of many of them. I think you have Laurie Sims right here in your music department. She has always been one of my favorites to listen to and watch. She's just so incredible. That's a woman with chops. That is somebody who did not say, I think I'll music direct Snoopy and lift from the recording.
Oh, I think you're selling yourself short.
Well, I'm selling myself differently, I suppose.
You chose experience over education, and who's to say, you know?
You're right.
What school was better?
Yeah.
You know.
It's true.
And it sounded like, Rob, you wanted to weigh in here.
I will say, you know, going back to when we chose the piece, Liberace, you know, the... Dan Gustin, who's the head of the Gilmore, is retiring, was a little apprehensive about bringing something like that in for his, you know, maybe final festival. And is this going to be too, you know, poppy or whatnot for the festival? And we had to convince him, you know, Liberace plays Chopin. He plays Rachmaninoff, you know, and this is a little fun. Everyone knows that, you know, this is a little different veering off for the Keyboard Festival. You know, you have these wonderful concerts and these musicians, internationally famous musicians, and then you can come to Farmer's Alley you know, any day during the festival, usually on the weekends, Thursdays through Sundays, and see something that's part of the festival and yet part of kind of not very unique. So sort of breaks up going to the concert halls and stuff like that. So it's a really, really wonderful, unique experience to see the show at Farmer's Alley.
This show will be staged downtown at the Farmer's Alley Theater in the smaller surrounded space. The shows are Thursdays at 7:30, Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., starting the 27th and continuing through the end of the Keyboard Festival, the 13th, which I assume is a Sunday?
That is a Sunday, yeah. And tickets are going so fast. We've already added a number of performances. We added a Sunday evening at 7 p.m. on one of the weekends. We added a Saturday matinee at 2 p.m., and if the show's popularity grows, my guess is that we may potentially have dates even beyond after the festival closes.
Let's head our conversation in the direction of Liberace.
Okay.
What are some of the right things and some of the wrong things you can do when taking it upon yourself to perform as a real person?
Well, the first thing, if you're really going to do it, is you need to read every book, every authorized, unauthorized biography, autobiographies, which tend to be more fiction than the truth sometimes. But and now with, you know, YouTube and all that stuff, I mean, watch clips, get to know, you know, this person's life, get to know the dates. Because I mean, when I first started doing it, I hadn't researched completely. And I was on a guest spot in a cabaret show. And I was being interviewed by someone nowhere near as wonderful as you, of course. But they asked me the dates of my TV show, as Liberace said. In the 60s, at least somewhere there. I had no idea. So these are important things when you're going to do this. And of course, to sort of look at things the way they would look at it, you know. And then the other thing that I think is very important, and I learned from working with a lot of the other icon impersonators, don't try to be a museum piece. I'm never going to be Liberace. There will never be another Liberace. It is my voice, my take on Liberace. That's what people will relate to more than watching somebody try and do an exact museum piece, because you really can't. And like I said, with YouTube and records, people want to watch the real Liberace, they can. It's there. So it's really a skill of knowing everything inside out, embodying that character, but also letting it speak through you.
He had such a long career, and longevity in the arts is more of an achievement than I can quite express.
That's true.
I'm trying to get to the heart of what made him tick. What was his greatest joy that kept him going?
Honestly, his greatest joy, I think, was truly love of the audience, love of giving. I mean, this play is a lot about love. That word is, you know, tantamount to the script. That would have been the driving force, you know, for him, especially in a career where he spent most of his life being criticized by especially the classical critics, even pop critics. You know, everything he did, he was, you know, took a lot of criticism. But it was the audience that always kept him going. And he learned how to take himself out of that criticism, that pain, very painful. Press is very hurtful sometimes. Just pure love with the audience, giving it to them and receiving it in return. That was his real joy in his career.
Well, what were some of the early experiences he had that put him on that path, that maybe gave him that strength?
Well, he grew up in the Depression, and he had very strict father, classical musician. His mother, he was immigrant from Italy, and his mother was a Polish immigrant. They were very tough on him. And, you know, he sort of had to play the role of the classical pianist. But, you know, much like me, he found a theater sort of side. Now, his theater side was playing at weddings and even stag parties at 16 years old during the Depression, during Prohibition, which he says in the script, you know, it was Milwaukee. Prohibition didn't prohibit anything. Accompanying strippers and things like that. These are the kind of things that he was, you know, wheeling and dealing at 16, playing with a, you know, pretty tough crowd. And I think that sort of confidence and having to really work for something was, you know, was key to him sort of getting that spine. He believed in what he did very much. And I think you have to do that first and foremost to even, you know, survive in this industry now. I mean, seriously, any instrument, any arts, anything.
Did he have a big break at some point, or was it years of hard work?
It was years of hard work. I mean, he was mentored by, he had a fabulous teacher when he started his training at the Wisconsin Conservatory at 7 years old. And he stayed there till he was 24 on full scholarship. This woman gave him the chops of steel. I mean, people remember him for, you know, the showy stuff and the pop stuff and all that stuff. This man had a classical technique that rivals the best of the best today. Didn't use it all the time, but he had that training. And after working restaurant jobs and odd jobs here and there, this wonderful teacher got him booked on a concert series that did small concerts in the upper Midwest. And he, it's a very, 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 the turning point of his career, played a concert in a town called La Crosse, Wisconsin. At the end of it, after his encores, he asked the audience for requests. And someone had shouted out the nonsensical tune, Three Little Fishies. And he proceeded to play Three Little Fishies, but in the style of Mozart, and then in the style of Beethoven, and the style of Johann Strauss. And this concert got reviewed, and the review went national. And that was the beginning when he said, I'm not an artist. I'm an entertainer. And that's when he got booked into some of the Las Vegas places. And then eventually his television show that in the 50s, the black and white that people tuned into, he had a bigger audience than I Love Lucy while he was on the air for those 2 years. And of course, every woman in America was in love with him. He was a sort of a matinee idol kind of thing, believe it or not, right? But that was that concert, the day, one night, that he just decided, I'm going for broke. I'll play this, but I'm going to play it in the classical styles, this silly pop tune, which then became his sort of MO for most of his stage career and persona, which is kind of cool.
Let me ask if that is something that is part of the show at all.
I will tell you that it absolutely is. Yes, it's because it's very important. And I will actually be performing that whole event. So so everyone will get to experience that turning point event.
So when we go to the theater at Farmer's Alley, David Maiocco as Liberace will give us some turning points in Liberace's early career and as it progresses as well.
Absolutely. Throughout the whole career.
Could you just play the tune, this Three Little Fishes tune for us?
I'd be happy
you
to.
You don't have to do the whole elaborate thing, but I'm just really curious to hear.
So the people had, you know, started shouting out, play Three Little Fishes! Come on, play Three Little Fishes! And he sort of, you know, thought, is this a big joke? Or, you know, I'll try it. And, you know, he did a little. And the audience chuckled a little bit, and he kind of said, all right, they started to go hysterical, so he got all into it, you know. And then he decided to sing. the sodom. Down in a meadow in a little bitty pool swam three little fishies and a mama fishy too. You requested it, sing it along with me. And they did. And then he decided, that's where he decided, I'm going to play now and say what a wonderful song this was, but what if it was written by some of the great composers of the past? And he plays, Eine kleine fishy music by Mozart. And then he does the what about Ludwig van Beethoven's Fish Symphony? Yeah, and yeah, and ends up with the and what about Johann Strauss's beautiful blue three little fishies waltz? So, you know, it was that sort of fun. You get the whole thing when you come to the show. But that was what he did. And he used that formula a few more times, most notably with Mack the Knife. And he did Mack the Knife in all the different styles, which is kind of fun. This sort of thing became his trademark, you know.
You mentioned his really influential teacher that he studied with for the entire early part of his life. But to get into television in Vegas, don't you need some sort of agent, important kind of manager?
It really, I guess it's always been hard, right? It's a lot harder now, unless you're a YouTube sensation. We keep going back to the YouTube, or as I call it, as Liberace in my cabaret act, the Your Tubes and the Interwebs, because he's still alive. He is going to be 99 May 16th. So I, as far as I'm concerned, he's alive. Basically, that review of that concert got him such attention that... he developed that style of playing, and he just met managers and people. He met Seymour Heller, who that was his name, who was his manager for most of his career. And this guy, Seymour, saw his club act. He was playing in New York City at the supper clubs as an intermission act for Hildegard, who was a big star back then. And most people don't remember her, but he was her intermission act. And this manager spotted him, heard him, and went to a big TV pioneer executive named Don Federson, who told him, I think we have our next act. Because, you know, they had the, you know, Betty White, I think, had a show. I Love Lucy was on. There weren't a lot of shows. We had, you know, those five channels at that point in time and the big antennas on the roof. So there wasn't, you know, we didn't have 900 channels of nothing you want to watch anyway, kind of, sort of. This guy went and said, I have our guy. And the TV executive said, a piano player? Are you out of your mind? We're going to put a piano player on TV, and this is our next big star. And, of course, they put him on, and he just had that charm. You know, he told jokes to the audience at the supper clubs, and he winked and he smiled and became friends with the audience. He wasn't playing classically anymore. He was an entertainer. And again, like you asked before, his greatest joy was the audience. And it translated to TV. That was the test. Was it going to work? And that man knew how to work a camera. He knew how to wink exactly when. And he came into people's living rooms every night. Ladies would dress to go into their living room and watch Liberace show. Mm. He just had that amazing, magnetic charm. So that was, you know, his big skill, and a little bit of luck, which is pretty much how all of us get anywhere. Either that's my luck of being cast here in this play. The fact that somebody I've worked with and know from New York City gave a huge recommendation, and I mean, I'm so lucky to be here. I had no idea. Scott Coulter didn't even mention to me that he had, you know, recommended me to Jeremy. I had no idea. So, you know, stroke of luck. And I'm as thrilled to do this here as Liberace probably was to be on TV. you know, he was making a lot of money, and I'm happy with what I'm making here. They take very good care of me, but same sort of thing, you know.
The fact that today he's remembered as much for his flamboyant costumes as he is for the very fine playing he did, is there a hint of sadness that sort of overtook his career, or is there another point to be made here?
I think it really it's not sad, because he really enjoyed, he really never liked classical concerts. He was a showman.
He was more himself this way.
He wanted to talk to that audience. He wanted, you know, to give and receive love, as he always said. He just was criticized so much, even with his, you know, early success. The music critics destroyed him every single time. Columnists started destroying this man who was in his mid-30s and single. You know, that whole thing, people started to, you know, wonder and then start to question his sexuality. He was just being bombarded with criticism. So basically, the Liberace that everybody knows from the 70s and the 80s was his own creation. This whole Mr. Showmanship character, he created that. It was almost like a voice in his head to preserve himself, yet keep giving to the audience. So, you know, it was in the play, we actually meet all three of these entities. We have the majority of the play is the real Liberace, the one that people really didn't know, sort of the private Liberace, but we get his story through there. Then there is the voice in his head, which we call Mr. Showmanship, that voice that told him, go further, ignore the critics, ignore all this hatred that's being thrown at you, ignore it. The people love you. They love your style, they love your glamour, and they love the personal connection. So it's like this voice in his head always said to him, go further. The more outlandish the costumes became, people loved him even more. And he kept getting criticized even more, really till the very end. He was criticized, you know, as hokey and low class and all that stuff, you know, déclassé, all that kind of stuff. But this, he, as he said, I cried all the way to the bank, you know. So he built this character to protect his own self, you know. So I think, you know, I think there's a lot of strength. There's a lot of smart in that, you know. But that's how he made it through without a lot of hurt, and yet made it through like really on top of his game.
Liberace starts April 27th. It's Friday night, and continues through May 13th, downtown at Farmers Alley Theater, starring David Maiocco, who's my guest here in the Takeda studio at WMUK. I'm going to ask for last thoughts here from Rob, the deputy director of Farmers Alley Theater, Rob Weiner.
Yeah, I mean, this is a show that if you think you know Liberace, you don't know the full story until you come and see the show. If you've never seen Liberace perform, we've got a great entertainer and showman here in David himself. And for Kalamazoo audiences to see, in my estimation, you know, the best recreation of this icon right here in your hometown or 15-minute drive away. I mean, you're doing yourself a disservice if you miss this one, because, you know, Farmers Alley Theater plus the Gilmore Festival plus this fantastic performer in David here is a combination that spells an incredible evening of entertainment at the theater. You're going to laugh. You're going to cry. You're going to feel the feels. And like David said, Liberace gets so much out of his audience, and even just seeing him perform this past weekend, the audience falls in love with him. Everyone's got a smile on their face. You know, during rehearsal for our gala performance, we had, you know, a dozen actors and, you know, half a dozen people working on crew, and we're all backstage, you know, rehearsing our lines and going through our notes and our blocking, etc. But when David came out in during tech rehearsal and performed, we all had to like crowd go around to the sides, come from backstage and watch him because he is that magnetic a performer and an artist. And tickets are going very, very quickly. So I've got a great seat every night, but we want to make sure that all of Kalamazoo comes out and witnesses this because it truly is a once-in-a-lifetime type of thing to see this performance.
How can people find tickets?
Yep, you can find us online at farmersalleytheater.com. Remember, theater is spelled the pretentious way, with an R-E on the end. You can also give us a call at our box office if people do that anymore. That's 343-2727. And find us on our social media channels, our Facebook page, Instagram, Twitter. There's a lot of really cool stuff. We have videos, some behind-the-scenes pictures and stuff like that that's going to be really interesting throughout the run of Liberace.
Well, David, I am going to ask you for one last thing, and that's a piece of music of your choice, as Liberace perhaps, or as yourself, either one. Just set it up for us.
Well, I think as we've been talking about, you know, what he did most famously, there is a piece of music that I think represents it best, how he took popular music and melded it with the classics and delighted his audiences with it. That is another important thing, is that he really still brought classical music to people, but through pop. Mm-hmm. You know, so people didn't, he always said, I took out the boring parts and I just put some extra notes and grabbed it in there just so my audience didn't get squirmy, you know, and that's what he would do. So maybe this classic, it would be kind of fun to hear if you'd like.
Let's hear it.